How much of an inspiration was Colonel Spicer to you?
He was like Jesus to me, like somebody I wouldn't even talk to. I was only a flight officer. But when he made a speech and said what had happened, he said, "Remember, these are your enemy. I don't want to see a single person in this prison camp being friendly with the Germans or trying to be friendly." Boy, I was motivated by him. He was a leader, if there ever was one.
And even though General Eisenhower had spread the word, "Don't try to escape now, we're going to get you out here within a couple of weeks," but you did it anyway.
Every time I would get into, I have to pay, go with solitary confinement for trying to escape, and you don't have any daylight, and you don't know what day it is or anything. I ended up in the cell next to him, and we knew when the Germans were coming because we were on wooden planks in front of our cells, and you could hear them clanking. And so he would wait until the sounds were coming down, and he'd knock on the door and say, "Who's my neighbor?" And I told him I was a flight officer. And he said, "Well, young man, what did you do to get in here?" And I said, "Well, I attempted to escape again." And he said, "I want you to know you're one of my heroes." And he said, "When we get out of here, I'll never forget you." And every day, he didn't know whether he was going to live or die, because they were going to put him before the firing squad. And one of the great heroes in my life. And you know of him and heard of him. So
sure.
He was a wonderful individual.
So you got in the ME-109, you got off, again with German markings, and you flew across Germany to Holland. How did you know you were in Holland?
Well, first of all, we went in to get, we were starving to death. And we went into a farmhouse, I knocked on the door, and a lady answered the phone. And I asked her if she spoke English, and she said, meaning a little bit. And so we tried to talk to her, and I told her we were escaped prisoners, and we were starving to death, and if she could give us something to eat, well, I'd like to leave a message that she had helped us. And so I wrote a note. She gave me some paper and a pencil, and I left a note saying that she had been helping us on our escape. And of course, we hadn't eaten eggs in a long, long time. That was really the first great breakfast I ever had. But she didn't read the note I left. And so after she fed us, I shook hands and thanked her, and my fellow that escaped with me, we hit the road. And we were walking down this dirt road that came out to this farmhouse, and she came out and she was holding the letter, the little note that I'd written with a pencil. And she was running and yelling, and I thought, "Oh my heavens, what's happened to the lady?" And I ran back to meet her, and she had a pistol in her hand and cartridges. And she said, "I just read the letter in broken English." She didn't speak too well. And I had said, she said to me, "This will do you more good, I'm sure, than it will me." And she gave me the pistol and a whole bunch of cartridges to go with it for the bullets. Well, boy, we were in Fat City. We got to have bicycles now. So we stole the bicycles. And we rode a lot of miles on those bicycles. But we had that gun for security for ourselves. And
so did you have reason to use the gun when you flew to the airfield?
I did. We finally came to an airfield, and it was deserted. But there were still people there, but compared to where it really would have been a few weeks earlier. and airplanes were in revetments. And for those of you who are not familiar with revetments, that is a U-shaped buildup of rocks or anything like this. And they park airplanes in them, and it's open at one end, and over the top they have something like a tent structure, but it looks like trees from the air. And so that's what we did, as well as the Germans. We hid our airplanes under those kind of situations at airfields, and they're not seen by the reconnaissance airplanes that come over and find out how many enemy airplanes you got on a different airfield. It's hard to know, you couldn't tell. And so I went from revetment to revetment, because the Germans had deserted so much that there were only a few of them walking around. And I saw the one come around, and I told my friend, whose name was Jerry Ennis, that I escaped with, I said, I'm going to put the gun on the next mechanic that comes by. And I could tell by the attire he had on, and the mechanic suit. And I motioned him into the hangar with the gun like this. And he came over to the hangar, and we couldn't communicate. And my friend Jerry said, Bob, he said, I taught French in high school before I joined the service. I'm going to see if he can speak French. We clicked, and he spoke French. And he told the German, he said, I'm going to shoot you if you don't help Bob start the airplane. Well, the Focke-Wulf 190 was not foreign to me, because Gus Lundquist, another friend of mine, who was a test pilot at Wright Field, was sent over to England to check out in all of the captured German airplanes that the British had. And he talked the general into letting him fly one mission, because he wanted to fight, but he was stuck as a test pilot at Wright Field. He had checked out in all of these airplanes and just spent 10 hours flying a Focke-Wulf 190. And I found out that he had been at Wright Field, where I wanted to go after the war. And I went over and started visiting with him. He didn't want anybody to know that he was from Wright Field or what he'd done or anything. And it didn't get out to any people hardly at all. But he revealed to me that's where he was stationed. And I said, there's that Focke-Wulf airfield right near here. And we would see them fly over. And I said, I would sure like to know how to start that engine. And he said, well, I'll draw you pictures. And we'd get out in the dirt after we'd be counted every day. And he would sketch off where the instrument panel was and everything. Well, 8 months later, when I got out, I got in that 190 and I looked at everything. And I thought, gee whiz, I'm in a world of trouble. And I said, Jerry, we got to figure out some way to... The man that he put the gun, I had brought into the revetment, he told him, he says, if you don't get that engine started and get him off the ground, you're dead. And boy, this guy started shaking, and boy, he turned pale white. And I got in the cockpit, and he helped me. And I thought I knew something about it, but it had been so long since Gus had checked me out. I didn't do anything. I just checked the engine, ran it up. I knew it was okay. It had a lot of bullet holes in it, but it was full of gas, so I knew that it was flyable.
You didn't have a parachute? You didn't have a cushion?
I had nothing. And
Could you see over the...
No, the problem was, this is the funniest thing, I didn't have a cushion, I didn't have a parachute, and so when I got in, I'm now, instead of sitting up like this, I'm now sitting here like this. looking out, and he got it started, and I thought, boy, there's still guys up in those gunroom sites around the field. I'm not going to taxi out. So I just ran the engine up until I got full power, released the brakes, straight out, and then up as steep as I could get. And then I thought, you are the dumbest aviator that ever flew. The war's almost over, and you idiot, you're trying to go in an airplane. What the hell are you accomplishing? And the answer is nothing. And so I was not proud of it. I got to remind telling you. And then I thought, boy, any young second lieutenant right out of flight training could have shot me right out of the sky. And I wouldn't have defended myself no matter what. And fortunately, there was a cloud deck at about 4,000 feet. And so I just got up to the edge of the cloud and level and stayed there. And I thought, if I see any American airplanes, I'll just duck up into the clouds and then wait a few minutes until maybe they quit looking and dive out and try to get free. I never had a problem. I never saw another airplane. But I went over many airfields, had full tanks of fuel, and I was headed for Holland because I wanted to see windmills to be sure that I was in favorable country, and they were on our side. And I just couldn't find any place to land. But I had an open field. My gas tank was registering close to zero, and I thought, better get it on the ground while I've got control. And so I circled the little place. It looked like it was a pretty good field. So I put the gear down and landed, and when I got on the ground, I could see a ditch that I had not seen from the air, and I was headed right for it. And I could picture myself hitting the ditch, flipping upside down, being trapped there, and nobody would ever find me. I ground-looped. I just reached down and sucked up the gear, booted full rudder. It skidded to a stop on its belly. I sat there for a few minutes and said, what the heck are you going to do now?